I wandered away into the fog, which by now seemed less dense. Presently I saw fighting going on, and watched it curiously. These are also dead, I came to the conclusion, for I saw men fall run through and through, yet rise and fight again. This is absurd. Just at that moment a private saluted and spoke. The chap just behind me now. Excuse me, he said, but am I dead or alive?
Dead, I think, I replied, but I am not absolutely sure.
Yes, sir, that's what I says. You see, my right leg was blowed off by a bomb. I know that all right, yet here it's safe and sound, so I reckon I must be dead. Made a fair mess of me, it did, but not a mark now, so I must have gone west apostrophe quite right. I've been watching those chaps fighting, and they keep killing each other and getting up and going on again as if nothing had happened. Apostrophe they make a fair row when the bayonet sticks into them, though. Apostrophes, so I noted, but it does not stop their fighting as it would on earth.
Talking of earth, sir, what are we on now?
His question flummoxed me, and I told him so. Just then another private came up, and entered into conversation also. He'd died of wounds in hospital, he said, and as we were comparing our experiences, up came a captain and several men. The captain told us we were dead, which we knew already, and asked us to come along with him, saying, "You feel a bit lost, and we'll show you round, put you up to all the wrinkles, and generally help you to find your feet. You'll find life here not half bad, plenty of fun, and no more fighting or death." You can guess my amazement, therefore, when this recent scrap started. As I could not make out the rights and wrongs of the case, I just stood aside. "But I'd really like to know, now that you've settled the business, what it was all about." So I went into the matter fully. But before doing so, I told the two privates to walk beside me so that they could follow all I said. You see, while they were attending to the sergeant, they would probably not have realized what I was saying. It is not distance which prevents one from hearing on this plane, but whether we direct our thoughts in the required direction or not. I felt I could explain matters a little better than the sergeant could. When I had finished, they all three had grasped the situation, and said they would join us. You can understand now, Jack, why Captain B had no weapons. His slow death made him realize he was dead. His knowledge of that fact made him realize the futility of the battle on the earth plane, and he therefore did not trouble to acquire a weapon. One point still puzzles you.
I see. He was attached to his body by the silver cord.
The real severance of the astral from the physical body does not always coincide with the heart's failure. It may not take place until the body has actually decayed. Some of the earthbound and suicides are in that unhappy position. HJL here broke in. Captain B, of course, perceived the thoughts of those he heard which coincided with their spoken words. That is easy enough to understand, but evidently the Batman was clairaudient. Possibly only temporarily, and he perceived the thoughts of his former master. It would be the easier because Captain B would be more material at that moment than he was even a few hours later. Doubtless the Batman had a real affection for the captain and this, as it were, sharpened his psychic faculties. We nodded, and Rex went on. Before leaving the subject, I would like to add that I know of the case of a man who was dying on the battlefield and he had a clear recollection of leaving his physical body for a time and finding himself still attached to it, and returning, once more to his body to awake to the earth life, only to lose consciousness again and finding himself once more outside his body, where he remained until the cord broke. HJL Another point to note is that Captain B could feel the cord, but not the body to which it was still attached. But go on with your narrative. RLW then continued. We had reached headquarters by now, but as we entered, I said to the other private, "I understand you died in hospital. I should very much like to hear your experiences if you don't mind waiting for a short time while we get these other fellows fixed up right, sir," he replied. So we entered our grounds. Chapter 11, At Headquarters. Colonel S. drew up his forces in the big square inches front of our buildings. The prisoners were in the middle, and looked as furious as any men could. "Well done, men,"
he cried, a good fight and a fine victory, but now that open war has begun, you will have to be on your guard. It's not so much force as guile which you have to fear. Now, I propose to keep these prisoners here surrounded by a wall of men. It's the only way to hold them, and remember, you must keep your minds concentrated on holding them here. The fact that they are disarmed makes little difference. It's their will that counts. That's why it's useless to attempt to lock them up in dungeons. Astral walls cannot hold an astral spirit if he wants to get out, because they have no will to resist him. You understand?
Yes, sir, they shouted.
Well, remember, if your minds wander, they'll be able to escape.
Yes, I know you can't stay here forever, but I don't intend you should.
The officer said, keep them here till I return. He will know what to do with them. Meanwhile, I'm going to start addressing them. He tried to do so, but they all shouted different things at once. Most told him to shut up as they didn't want any pie-jaw. There were a few women among the crowd, and these began to ogle our men. I, Lieutenant L.W., therefore went up to him and suggested I should ask some of the chief men who were in the building to come out and help, and also to bring at least one of our party for each of the enemy. He jumped at the idea, and we were soon busy at the job. I dodged a golden-haired damsel and buttonholed a young private, who I could see was a fairly new arrival, and therefore not hopelessly hardened. I won him over, incidentally. While we were in the middle of this job, the officer arrived. He afterwards told us about his struggle with the enemy on the battle plane. But that must wait. I'll just tell you he had won. He at once dominated the whole of us. He told his old story, which you know so well, of his own fate, and we could see it made a tremendous impression. When he had finished, man after man came up to him and said, "Sir, I should like to put myself in your charge for a time, at least. You have given me a bad fright, and I know some of the things you have said about obsession are true. I can see you are telling us the truth about the other matters. I would like to stay with you and learn more. If, after all, I decide to go to the devil, it shall be with my eyes open." So I put it one way and some another, but those are the words of one man, and they were typical of many. The enemy captain said, "If I want to go to the devil, I shall go, and no one shall stop me." The officer replied, "Certainly, but you are not going to hang about here dragging others down. I'll see to that. Go down to the 2nd Division, and stay there." As he spoke the words, I could feel the willpower going out. He made mysterious passes, and the man turned and fled. He burst through the ranks of the surrounding troops, and as he went we heard him screaming, "I can't stop. I must go on." He disappeared. I dared not speak to the officer for some moments, but at length the set expression on his face vanished, and he turned to me and said, "You have seen me work a spell for the first time. Some might say it was not right. I know it is. He can't return now. He has made his choice. Let him abide by it." Silence fell on all. It was the first time any of us had seen the officer in this mood, and we were frightened.
Yes, frightened.
In a flash we realized the tremendous power the man possessed, and the awful strength of his will. It was almost as if the voice of God, or, at least, he added quickly, of a God had spoken. Yet we knew he was but a man, and had once been a thoroughly bad man. Still the silence reigned supreme, till it was broken by the voice of a woman crying, "O God! If there is a God, what will become of us? I'm afraid." The officer turned to her quickly. "No more of that. Madame, you have set yourself to drag men down. If you are penitent, the road to salvation lies open. If not, there lies the road to hell. Take your choice, oh, and blame no one but yourself." She rushed up to him. "What can I do to be saved?" The words gave us a strange thrill. Needless to say, we recognized them. Over there lies the nunnery of Saint Benedict. Go to the Mother Abbess and ask her help. She can show you how to be saved.
But am I free?
She asked in evident surprise.
Yes, if you wish to return to your evil ways, go and do so. You asked, "What can I do to be saved?" And if you are not, you know now what lies in store. Let me stay with you. You are strong, you can save me.
That is not my work. I save men, not women. I should be too hard, and you would hinder me. Choose. And she did go straight to the abbey where, for aught I know, she still is. And thus he dealt with the remainder, reading their characters to a nicety. Always he sent the women away to the abbey, and kept the men with him. But at length there was a residue who showed plainly that they did not wish to be saved, and yet he evidently considered they were not yet sufficiently evil for him to drive down to the second division. They took the attitude that they could not help it. They were too much in the clutches of their earth's desires to resist. They knew they were fools, but they could not help it. If he would let them go, they would promise not to tempt others, but it was useless to pretend they could give up their evil ways. They hadn't the will. Apostrophe promise. He said, with withering scorn. You promise anything, yes, and mean it at the time, but you have no more will to keep your promise than you have to change your way of living. But I will reinforce your will with mine. Go, and never dare to draw near the club, nor to approach the battle plain, nor to speak to any of the newly slain. As he spoke again, we felt the power of his will beating upon the abject creatures who cringed before him. He made strange passes, and again silence fell on all. Then, one by one, they crept away, 10 men and 3 women, and as they passed the significance of the number struck me. It was all over now, and a sigh of relief broke out from all present, as the last of them disappeared in the distance. The gathered troops were dismissed, and the officer, followed by most of his staff, including myself, entered the building. We were all anxious to know what had happened on the battle plain. But I must stop now. I'll continue next time. H.J.L. Yes, Jack, you must be off at once. J.W. Half a minute. I want you to make inquiries about a certain matter. Recently I read in the Occult Review an article by an airman, who inquired whether anyone knew whether there were occult forces which ruled the air and were hostile to man. H.J.L. The answer is in the affirmative, as they say in Parliament. But we will collect further information on the whole subject, and let you know later. Now, goodbye. And I return to Earth. Chapter 12, I go out in search of F. December 14, 1917, when I heard this morning of the death of J.H.F. in action, I blamed myself for not having told him when last I saw him at GP of what I knew of life on the astral plane. It might have been of such help to him, and now 6 weeks had elapsed, and in that period he might, through ignorance, have been led astray. Therefore I determined not to wait till Monday, but to go out the same night, seeking him. As this, Friday, December 14th, was not my usual night, I foresaw difficulties. I, nevertheless, adopted special steps before lying down to sleep. Apparently I had little difficulty in getting clear of my physical body, for I soon found myself in front of the house where R.L.W. dwelt. On entering I found their only mother, who said, "What's the matter? I was just going out. Surely this is not your usual night." "No," I replied, and told her briefly my purpose in coming, inquiring at the same time where H.J.L. and R.L.W. were. "Mother, H.J.L. is in the spirit plane, and will not return till Monday. Rex is at headquarters attending to some sort of duty. I don't exactly know what it is." "J.W., where is it?" Mother came to the door, directing me how to proceed, adding, "I believe it is some way off, but it won't take you long, of course. It never does here." So, I started off on my journey. I soon left the town behind me, and found myself passing along a road bordered with tall poplars. I passed a small spinney on the right, and over a low hill. I traveled fast, and it did not seem long before I saw R.L.W. coming rapidly towards me. "As soon as we met," he said, "I was surprised to receive your call, but gathered you were seeking a friend who had been killed." I told him what had happened, and he then said, "You've got the number complete?" So I repeated it. "I want to find Private J.H.F., number 762128, 1st Artists Rifles, D Company, 13th Platoon. We will go to headquarters and look him up in our books." So we continued our journey and soon saw a fine block of buildings in a large park. Was what on earth must have been a fine French chateau, built in the style of about 1770. A broad flight of steps led up to the main door, which was supported on either side by two great classical columns. Large as this building is, it was not large enough, so you will see on either side are two other chateaux in a somewhat similar style. We walked round this huge mass of buildings, and found that these two other chateaux had been placed at right angles behind the first buildings. We passed through a narrow passage on the right as we faced headquarters, and R. L. W. said, "This building is a club for the privates and non-corns. All officers are honorary members, but the whole management is in the hands of a committee elected by the privates and non-coms. It's a fine place, with every form of mental amusement you can conceive. Next is drawing, see PDF book. Headquarters. The building on the other side of the square is divided into two blocks. The wing on the right, as we face the main building, contains additional administrative quarters, while the other half is the officers' club. This square was the scene of the triumph of the officer over the enemy, which I described to you on the last occasion. We'll waste no more time, though, but go into the main block. J.W. Just a moment. How did you get those three buildings together?" RLW headquarters is the original chateau which, when destroyed, came to this spot, which corresponds with its original site in France. We used it as it stands for some time, merely making a few internal adjustments to suit our present needs. As our organization expanded, we needed more room. So we moved, piece by piece, these other two from their original location. The men did it themselves, under suitable direction. The methods were very similar to those which would be applied on Earth. These buildings were semi-material, you must remember, and not like those in the next plane, where the fortunate inhabitants can construct great buildings out of their mine stuff. They are still working at the officers' club, and he pointed to one corner where a large number of men in their shirt sleeves were busy adding, "We have made a very considerable rearrangement of the interior, putting in new walls in some places, and leaving them out in others. But come, let us go back to the front, we can go over the whole block at another time." So soon we were passing up the flight of steps which led us into a magnificent central hall. We turned down a passage on the left and Rex opened a door on the right of this passage and led me into a large room which was evidently a library. RLW, this was the library, but many of the books we have handed over to the town library, run by the old man of whom I spoke some time ago. We needed the space for our own books, and particularly for the register. He took me into a small room at the end, and here we found a young sergeant at a table, to whom he said, "We wish to trace a man, artist's rifles, named J.H.F. by the way, Jack, I suppose you are sure that was his real name?" J.W.O., "Yes, quite certain of it." "What makes you ask?" RLW, "Sometimes we get men who have enlisted under another name. When they come here they often give their real name. Afterwards they tell us their assumed name, and so we have to cross-reference them." "Sergeant, about what date, sir?" RLW, 30th of October, 1917, 13th Platoon, D Company. The sergeant got down a large volume finely bound. It was labeled Artists' Rifles, Volume 3, August, 1917. RLW, "We register them under their regiments, but, of course, often we have to have cross-references when a man has been transferred from one regiment to another. I noticed the book was arranged in alphabetical order, with 23 pages index at the front, one letter to each page, except R and J, Q and R, X and Z, which had only one page." Running through index F, the sergeant rattled off several names, and then stopped. "FJH, this must be the man, sir, page 163. The book has filled up very fast lately." He turned over the pages rapidly, and then handed the book to Rex, saying, "Here you are, sir." RLW read as follows: "JHP, number 762128, D Company, 13 Platoon. Killed in action between the dates October 27th and November 3rd, visit of JW. You see, Jack, we use your visits to help out our chronology, and we find it difficult to be precise in our dates unless a newly slain man is certain, and this chap wasn't, as you will see. He continued, "This man was brought in by Privates Simpson and Reed. He appeared very dazed, and could give no clear account of himself. Private Reed reported that he found the newcomer wandering vaguely up and down the Earth battle plane and persuaded him to come with him. All they could get out of the newcomer was, 'I want a drink damned badly. I feel beastly queer.' He was taken to Captain G, who spoke as follows, 'Captain G, Private F, you have now left the Earth for this, the astral plane. You have given your life in a good cause, as have all those with whom you are now associated. We are anxious to help you in every way we can. To do so, we require all the information you can give us about yourself. Can you tell me how you were killed?' Private F. 'No, sir. There was a hell of a bombardment, but I don't remember what happened till I found myself wandering about in a fog. Don't remember much till these two found me and brought me here. Perhaps if I had a drink, and something to eat, I'd feel clearer.' Captain G, you don't need either here, and will soon feel better. Can you tell me anything about yourself or who you were on Earth? What profession or trade? Been in the East, I think. Private F, yes, in Burma. Came home to get a commission, and didn't get it. Beastly shame, I call it. But I can't think clearly. Captain G then put sundry questions to Private F, but as he could get no clear answer, put down this entry, 'Private F. Evidently inclined to need drink. This should be guarded against, and I have handed him over to Dr. C. Private F. Was then examined by Dr. C, who reports as follows, -Private F. Of the artist's rifles appears to be suffering from death by shell shock. There appear no traces of wounds, but conditions are not clear. I believe killed by a shell, but there appear to be other complications. Condition of death seems to have resulted in soul being in a disturbed and muddled state. He should be watched carefully. Strong tendency to alcoholism, not necessarily chronic. Strong materialistic tendencies. Animal appetites greatly in evidence. Recommend he be placed amid cheerful surroundings. Taken to entertainments. Every endeavor should be made to distract his attention from, 1, his own condition, and, 2, Earth conditions. The report was acted upon, and the above-mentioned privates took Private F to the Privates Club and watched over him. Private F, however, proved himself a difficult case. He was unable to shake off the desire for food and drink. At all times exceedingly amiable, he yet displayed an obstinate nature on this subject. He escaped from the club on several occasions, and was persuaded to return only after considerable difficulty. The latest report is that he recently left the club and was seen in the company of some very undesirable characters. It is doubtful then it will be possible to save this man from his besetting temptation. RLW ceased and then said, "Not a very hopeful report. I fear it means that he has gone back to the earth plane with these undesirables, and if so, there can be but one end, JW poor old F. Well, I'm going to make an effort anyway. Do you think we can find him? Perhaps you can. There is the bond of friendship to help you. We hadn't that, you see. I'll come with you." So we left headquarters and, concentrating my mind on F, I felt myself drawn in a certain direction. We passed rapidly across the astral plane. Thence we descended to the earth plane. On this we passed amid shadowy towns and buildings, and always the atmosphere grew more dark and foggy. At length we came to what must have been London. We paused finally in front of a low drinking den, somewhere in the East End. "But all pubs will be shut at this hour of the night," I said. "Not all. These illicit drinking clubs still survive. Being illicit, only the most hardened reprobates are to be found here." The house we entered appeared a dilapidated place, but once inside we found it was lighted up and fairly bright. There seemed a fair number of men and women present, and many astrals battening upon them, but I hardly had time to notice this before I spied P, and clapped him on the shoulder. "Good God!" he cried, "are you dead too?" "W. No, I'm not dead, but I've just come to find you. You're wrong, W. You're dead, and don't know it. It took me some time to twig that myself, but as I'm dead, you must be. I argued the matter with him, and asked him to come away with me, but he said, have a drink, old chap. I've just discovered how it's done. It's taken me a devil of a long time to do so, but thanks to that chap over there, I've learned the trick at last. Come along. Then began a strong tussle between our respective willpowers, but luckily, he was evidently not very strong in that faculty, and R.L.W. helped also, so that at length we got him outside. His companions were so busy satisfying their own appetites that they did not worry about him. Once outside, R.L.W. and I painted such a terrible picture of the results which would flow from his proposed action that we frightened him rather badly, and he agreed to come back with us. He seemed also greatly impressed by my coming to help. As I said goodbye to R.L.W. I said to him, did I interrupt you in any work you were doing? R.L.W. I should just think you did. I was right in the middle of a lecture to a class of officers when I felt you calling me. I knew you wouldn't be here unless for some good reason, so I got another man to take my place and came straight off to see you. But now we must part. Hope to see you all the same on Monday. So I returned direct to Earth. Chapter 13, The Rout of the Enemy. December 17th and 18th, 1917. As soon as I entered the room where R.L.W. sat I said, what has happened to F? R.L.W. replied, he is still at the club but, of course, I can't say how he will develop. Without allowing any more conversation, he resumed his narrative of the previous week. We all gathered in a large room where we usually meet to discuss matters, and as soon as we had taken our places round the table the officer began. When I arrived back on the earth plane I found a regular battle raging between our men and the enemy. At first sight it must have been difficult for a newcomer to distinguish it from the other astral battle. None of us, however, had any doubt on the matter, and flung ourselves into the fray. As you know, until the fight near the club I have not fought since my great battle in hell. Now, however, I was on the side of the angels. The enemy were endeavoring to drive us clean off the earth plane into the dream plane, and if possible, even out of that. If successful in that it meant that all intercourse between the better astral being and the newly slain would be prevented. The earth folk who wander on to the dream plane would, in like manner find only the more evil astral beings, and I need not dilate on the disastrous results. But such a scheme was far too ambitious. The evil powers are always incapable of cooperation or of coordinated effort. To be short, I came into the battle line with 10,000 men, having picked up sundry reinforcements by the way, and as I came I sent out thought messages calling up all who were not already busily engaged. On the earth battlefield groups of our party were still at work rescuing the newly slain or beating off isolated attacks but between them and us lay the main body of the enemy. Often the swaying battle line seemed to rise in the air, and the tide of the war fluctuated rapidly over the heads of the newly slain who, for the most part, seemed not to perceive us. From the further side, or edge of the second division, came out swarms of degraded obsessing spirits who hurled themselves into the fight with the utmost fury. Still our line held, and even pressed them back. But from the lowest division of all the evil elements began to rise. In front of them rushed the elementals of the second division, either of their own will or possibly driven forward by the still more evil creatures who now began to appear. As these appalling apparitions came in view, the mortal battle which was raging on earth increased in intensity. Similarly the newly slain who fought over the same ground raged even more fiercely, but the worst effect was mainly felt in our struggle. The battle in hell was nothing compared to it, and it was not surprising that some of my men, struck with terror at the sight of the evil elementals from the gateway of hell, should fall back a little. I was just on the point of calling in you who were at headquarters, and those blockading the club, in a last desperate endeavor to stay the advance, which was gathering speed every moment, when suddenly a wave of white fire flowed over our heads, followed by another and another. As they kept on sweeping down we perceived they were spirit of light, far higher than ourselves, who had come to our aid. Whence they came, I know not. Maybe from the army who are ever battling with the elementals of the gateway of hell.